Case number 21-1261, Deborah Howard et al. Versus City of Detroit, Michigan et al. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes for plaintiffs, 15 minutes to be shared by defendants. Mr. Schoenberg for the appellants, when ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. Sam Schoenberg for the plaintiff's appellants, and good afternoon, counsel. Before I begin, I just want to confirm that I'm reserving 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. May I proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor. In 2017, Detroit, acting under state supervision, committed a series of errors regarding that year's property tax assessment notices that deprived plaintiffs and all Detroit homeowners of due process. Plaintiffs here sued in federal court because those errors combined with rigid local and state law to make redress in Michigan courts either legally impossible or highly uncertain under controlling state precedent. The district court's decision dismissing this case for lack of jurisdiction should be reversed for three specific and principal reasons. First, the district court did not analyze each of plaintiffs' remedies, and this was in contravention of the plain language of the Tax Injunction Act, or TIA, and Supreme Court precedent interpreting it. Two, the district court should be reversed because several of plaintiffs' remedies do not implicate the TIA at all because they do not seek to restrain.
Can I ask you a question? Because I was confused by your brief a little bit. Are you conceding that some of the remedies are seeking to restrain the collection or assessment of a tax and you're going straight to the unavailability of the remedy? Or are you saying that all of them do not involve the assessment or collection of a tax?
Without conceding that some of these remedies would in fact restrain, there are certain remedies that do restrain, that do not restrain, and those include the prospective injunctive relief and due process declaration here, and other ones, even if they are held to restrain the assessment or collection of taxes, if they were held, okay, do not have okay, a plain, speedy, and efficient.
So what's your position? So is the retroactive reopening of the assessment, doing a reassessment, I guess, or revisiting the assessment? You want to reopen the appeal process, right? Are you conceding that that is restraining the assessment of a tax, or are you saying that because it's retrospective or something, it's not covered by the TIA?
That one we are saying that even if the court does find that that does implicate the TIA because it restrains the assessment of taxes, there is no plain, speedy, and efficient remedy for a retroactive appeal of 2017 taxes.
And what about foreclosure? Doesn't that clearly affect the collection of taxes? That's the main way to collect them.
It does, Your Honor. And for that one, that would implicate the TIA at its first step.
Okay.
But also for that remedy, there is no plain, speedy, and efficient relief available to plaintiffs in Michigan court. So first of all, the district court's analysis did not do this analysis that we're talking about here of looking at each of the types of relief that plaintiffs sought, which is seven distinct forms of relief. In the Hibbs v. Wynn case, the Supreme Court instructed that when deciding whether the TIA bars federal court jurisdiction, it is appropriate first to identify the relief sought. And here the district court did that with only one of plaintiff's remedies. And we contend that that failure of analysis alone requires reversal. If we go to the substance of the remedies, however, several of them do not implicate the Tax Injunction Act at all. And these include prospective injunctive relief that would require Detroit to comply with due process in the future, and a declaration that defendants or that plaintiffs' due process rights were violated in 2017. Under the direct marketing case, even a form of relief that may in some way act on assessment, levy, or collection is not barred in federal court if that relief does not restrain the collection of or assessment or levy of a tax. And here, the prospective relief, Detroit said in their brief here, does not challenge the 2017 tax assessment and tax collection, and no defendant has made any showing that these forms of relief would in any way restrain those acts that the TIA acts upon. And the due process declaration likewise does nothing other than say that under this one-time bungling of Detroit's tax administration process, plaintiff's due process rights were violated. It would not, unlike other cases that seek to, where a declaratory relief is barred in federal court, it would not seek to invalidate any provision of tax law, and it would not challenge plaintiff's tax liability. Finally, there are several remedies that simply have no plain, speedy, and efficient remedy in the Michigan courts. And here, plaintiffs are focusing on that word plain in the TIA, which under the Supreme Court's Rosewell case, a remedy that is uncertain or speculative in state courts is not plain for purposes of the TIA. And I'll note also that this is the same analysis to be made under principles of comity, which the cases there use the language of plain, adequate, and complete relief. And plaintiffs here clearly cannot seek complete relief for their claims in Michigan courts. And that was true either in 2017 at the time of the due process violations.
Did any of the plaintiffs try to, I mean, the appeal had been waived, the timing was changed. There are the Michigan cases that suggest that if you don't get notice, this provision is waived, even though it's jurisdictional. I agree, it's confusing. But did any of your clients try?
Your Honor, in this case, plaintiffs were affirmatively told they had no opportunity. So no, they did not. But they were affirmatively misled by the only notice that Detroit sent them.
Isn't it correct that, at least it says it's uncontested, that 2,500 people went to the assessors despite the very short time limit, and 1,100 took advantage of the opportunity to skip the assessors and go straight to the Board of Review. So if that's correct, and I haven't seen it challenged, you know, this was not a secret that only two people found out about. The fact that somebody doesn't do what most people do doesn't make the remedy not available, does it?
It certainly makes it not plain under the TIA's
How many people would have had to have taken advantage of it to make it plain? I mean, 2,500 is a lot of people.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that number, Judge Boggs, because while Detroit did put in those numbers, which are outside of the pleadings, we have not yet taken any discovery on any other years. So it's our assumption, although we cannot test that at this point, that the numbers of appeals was much greater in the years before 2017 and in the years after. Now, of course, that's a matter for discovery, and this is an issue that's beyond the pleadings.
Is the 2,500 figure only in the record as a matter of Detroit's assertion that it is without an evidentiary basis?
Or? It is. Yes, Your Honor.
So we don't know that that's the figure or not in your view.
Correct. Even assuming that it's the view, however, even though some individuals did happen to receive notice through the ad hoc remedies that Detroit put forward here, all plaintiffs' due process rights were violated by the actions of Detroit because of the way the notices were sent and the timing. And then going to the ad hoc remedies that Detroit instituted, supposedly extending the Board of Assessors review or waiving it altogether, the district court credited those remedies as a potential path for plaintiffs here to appeal their assessments. But the district court and defendants here overlook some glaring problems with those remedies that make them not plain. They were very poorly communicated, as alleged in the complaint, and apparently undisputed, only put out through a press release of the city that was picked up by some news articles, and one of those remedies was announced at one public meeting. No one suggests that that is adequate notice. It's not. It doesn't even count as publication notice.
Was there not a notice in the papers? I had understood that there was. Am I wrong? We'll hear what they have to say. I thought there was
There was no
boilerplate notice, and then that was picked up in the press to some degree. That was my understanding.
To our understanding, and as pleaded in the complaint, there was an announcement made by the city that a few news articles picked up. We cited three of those articles in our complaint.
It may be that Judge Boggs is referring to the 260,000 notices that were sent. And I understood your position about that to be that those notices not accurately advise the people who got them of what their situation was. Is that
right? Yes, Your Honor. That is correct. And even the Detroit defendants here assert their own position of the law is that they are required to send an individualized notice of assessment in time to appeal. And they did not do that in this case. The ad hoc remedies that Detroit instituted were not properly communicated. They also violated Detroit statute because Detroit statute sets a date certain for Board of Assessors appeals and makes a Board of Assessor appeal a mandatory prerequisite to a Board of Review.
Can I ask you a question before your time runs out? How closely does the relief that's available in state court, I guess, in the state process, have to match what you would get in a 1983 suit?
There would not be retrospective relief available, we believe, at all. Potentially a declaratory relief in state court, but...
Do you have to have the exact same remedies in order to satisfy the tax injunction, or can it be adequate even if it's not the same?
Thank you, Your Honor. Under the Rosewell case, it quoted from the Senate report that passed the Tax Injunction Act, and that spoke to the fact that there must be a full judicial hearing and determination of the controversy available in state courts. And here that full judicial determination and full relief is not available in state courts when it comes to a retroactive appeal or damages for amounts that are overassessed or claims against Wayne County.
You're talking about regardless of whether the jurisdictional requirement is waived or not?
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand.
So I thought one of the problems with the adequacy of the remedy was these timing requirements were jurisdictional now.
They are.
And so you wouldn't be able to, it's possible that you wouldn't be able to appeal, although some of the courts seem to have found a way around it. It's a separate argument, I suppose, that the relief itself wouldn't, even if you could appeal, that the relief itself wouldn't be adequate. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and also that under the state statute or the state case law, it's just really uncertain whether plaintiffs would ever have that path.
Oh,
to
I got.
With.
I understand that. Your time is.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Your Honor.
Just to make sure I understand, the appellee's time is being divided. 10 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes?
That's correct, Your Honor.
You're the 10-minute arguer.
Yes, Your Honor. Jim Nocita for the City of Detroit. May it please the court. One of the panel asked if the numbers in the assessors of the people who actually appealed are in the record, and there is a declaration from the assessor that attests to those numbers. The plaintiffs claim undoubtedly seeks to challenge both assessments and collection of taxes. And I think it's absolutely clear that the Tax Injunction Act can't restrain that. The only argument that plaintiffs really put forward that would excuse them seeking their state remedy is their claim that the Michigan procedures are rigid and difficult and uncertain, but they're not at all. I think when you read the Spranger case, which is discussed in the brief, the court made it absolutely clear that where the Board of Review denies due process because they don't hold a hearing or they don't give notice, that the Michigan Tax Tribunal must hear the matter. And the MTT has plenary de novo review that you can present anything you want. And I don't know if the courts are as familiar with Michigan's tax foreclosure or tax assessment process, but it's the assessor's review is very informal. You can walk in, you can make a phone call. We resolve lots of disputes that way. The Board of Review is slightly more formal. You have to actually make a request, and you schedule a hearing before a panel of citizens, and you present your argument, and they can give you the relief. And if you're not satisfied with that, you can go to the MTT. Now, the Michigan case law is absolutely clear that where some, by whatever reason, because of a failure to deliver notices, whether they're untimely or late, that the MTT has to hear a taxpayer's appeal. And there was a question whether any of these taxpayers sought review before the assessors or...
Clarity of that state of the law is best reflected how? I mean, where if we want to be convinced
sure.
that you are absolutely right about that, what should we be looking at in terms of
well, first
case
I'd,
law or...
Yeah, first I'd start with Springer. But I think the Parkview case, which plaintiffs try to distinguish but can't, because in Parkview, that's 183 Mishap 116, 1990, they adopted the Supreme Court's position in Burnside versus Bangor Township and held that where notices of tax assessment are late, the MTT must hear the matter. And then the plaintiffs cite in their brief a couple of unpublished decisions that followed, actually, Parkview and found that it was controlling law, although they disagreed with Parkview's determination that it was a procedural requirement.
I thought that there was some significance attached to the fact that Parkview was decided before 1990, and for that reason, the Michigan Court of Appeals had declined to follow it.
They had not declined to follow it. They just are not bound by it because of a Supreme Court rule that was adopted before my time that said that decisions before 1999 are not binding on subsequent panels. But as pointed out in Michigan State University versus City of Lansing, which is cited by the plaintiffs, the court says, we recognize Parkview is not binding authority under MCR 7.215J1. And that later cases have said that the requirements to go to the Board of Review are binding. Nevertheless, they said Parkview followed Supreme Court authority. There is no limitation on Supreme Court authority, and that you must afford it, where a notice is late, you must afford due process. And it's interesting because in Parkview, the assessment notices were sent 2 days before the Board of Review concluded its proceedings. So there was no way for anyone to go to the Board of Review.
Isn't there a question, though, about whether it's jurisdictional or not? I mean, Parkview said it's not jurisdictional, the appellate, the making sure you dot the I's and cross the T's.
Right.
And the later cases seem to say it's jurisdictional.
They do, but I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Take
a look at the Morehouse versus Township of Mackinac case, also cited by the plaintiffs. And the court there says, in order to protect the petitioner's due process rights, this was another late notice case, and consistent with Burnside, the Supreme Court's decision, we adopt and follow the approach set forth in Parkview, except for that portion that said, that concluded that the requirements of Board of Review were procedural, not jurisdictional. So they have addressed the issue. There's no doubt. And if you go back through all of Michigan history on tax assessments, you can go back to township.
But the import of all this about the tax tribunal, am I right, is that you would be saying that even if they hadn't gone even to the Board of Review, they could go straight to the tax tribunal. Now, I take it that we don't have any declaration that anybody actually did that.
There's nothing in the complaint or otherwise to suggest that any plaintiff sought review in the tax tribunal or was denied review.
According to the declaration, at least you had 1,100 that went to the Board of Review, so they didn't need to get into this Parkview Burnside argument.
Correct. And that 1,100 were people who didn't go to the assessor's review. There are more people that go to the Board of Review than that.
Plus however many of the
2,500 did. And to your point, the tax tribunal proceeding is exceedingly simple and straightforward. And there's no suggestion here that any plaintiff sought to follow it. And the argument that I think the plaintiffs are suggesting that we had to spell out for them all of the particularities of Michigan law. And there's no support for that proposition. I mean, people are charged with knowledge of the law. The tax tribunal's been around. And the fact is we're talking about an assessment in one given year.
I mean, this seems to be a little bit beyond that. I mean, I'm with you, except some of these cases seem to talk a little bit past each other or maybe a little bit inconsistent. If somebody says something's jurisdictional, I don't know, and says it's subject matter jurisdiction, I'm not sure how I would read that. I mean, then I have to go look at a couple other cases and see that they have an exception or it's actually a due process violation, so it's not a problem. I mean, it's not written down in a code or something.
No, it's not. It's case law. It's the law in Michigan that where you're denied, where a taxpayer is denied an opportunity to be heard, that the Michigan Tax Tribunal has to hear the matter.
Oh, so really, the determination of whether there's a plain error is going to
plain remedy.
Yes, thank you. It's going to depend on our interpretation, our reading of a bunch of Michigan case law, right?
Well, we are, that's exactly what we're dealing with, is Michigan law and what affords a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy.
The problem is that case law inherently, in some sense, I mean, as plain as we try to make it, sometimes inherently case law is not all that plain in terms of what it's even saying.
Well, you know, I think in response to that, Your Honor, the fact is that in circumstances where someone did have the opportunity to go to the Board of Review and didn't because they had notice, the law is clear. That's jurisdictional. But the law is also clear that time and again, and again, going back as far as I could find in Michigan jurisprudence, that where a person is denied their right to appear before the Board of Review because of procedural irregularity, which is what we're talking about here, that the taxpayer is entitled to relief, either before the tax tribunal by the circuit court or after the Tax Tribunal Act was adopted by the tax tribunal. And of course, from there, you can appeal to the, from the tax tribunal, you can go to the Court of Appeals, you can raise constitutional issues there. I mean, nothing is foreclosed. The relief, I think a question was asked whether the relief sought here mirrors what's in federal court, mirrors what they could seek in federal court. And I think the answer to that is yes. You know, it's interesting. There's a case where in the city of Dearborn had denied, well, actually they had, all the people in the city of Dearborn received a tax notice after the June 30th deadline for going to the board, Michigan Tax Tribunal. And the Supreme Court in Shaughnessy versus Michigan Tax Tribunal, 420 Mich 246, held that the Court of Appeals could issue a writ of superintending control requiring the tribunal to hear all of those appeals. So I think that's really clear. That's the Supreme Court speaking, where they said, yes, it's proper. And the claim by the
plaintiff. Rule? I mean, what is that? Is that a articulable rule? Like, what, so the law of Michigan is, declared by the, like under the Rules Decision Act or something, if it were an eerie question, we would say the law of Michigan is, if you get a notice after the time for appeal, you are allowed an appeal, regardless of whether the statute says that it's
right,
jurisdictional.
The tax tribunal must hear it. And it's interesting, because the Supreme Court did that in the Perfecting Church case involving tax foreclosure, where there was a statute that said you can't appeal a tax foreclosure. And they said, no, if you're denied due process, you absolutely can. I think the state of Michigan, it goes beyond, it strives to provide due process, and it has provided due process.
By the way, in all of these cases, did the state concede that that was true? I mean, if it's the law of Michigan, then the state surely would just concede that they should be allowed to appeal. Like, why would there even be case law at some point?
Well, because we're so often talking about it's an appeal from a decision by a township board, and maybe they don't get it. I mean, it's not the state of Michigan necessarily. It's usually individuals that are bringing an appeal from a local taxing
authority.
Do we have the view
of the attorney general or somebody that says can confirm that this is the law of Michigan, that these appeals are allowed, or...
I don't know if there's an attorney general opinion on that that's not binding on the courts, but I think the attorney general of Michigan, if asked to opine on that, would say that where due process has, where notice is late, that the taxpayer must be heard before the Michigan Tax Tribunal.
So, and that has been the state's consistent position in all the litigation that would be relevant?
I believe so, Your Honor. And my time is up. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Michael Hill, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the State Tax Commission appellees, Mr. Buick, Morris, and Kutchman. I just briefly wanted to address the plaintiff's assertion that the prospective injunctive relief that they've requested in their complaint does not implicate the Tax Injunction Act, and I kind of wanted to tie that into as far.
Are you authorized to give us the state's position on this question about the remedy?
Remedy, I would
But like, is the state would not enforce the jurisdictional statute if the notices were late?
I think counsel's statement about due process being at the center of a state's jurisprudence was correct. In terms of if notice is not sufficient for someone to meet the statutory requirements of protest before the Board of Review, the tribune, there is the authority, the ability to waive that requirement and be heard in the tax tribunal.
Where would we best find that that has been the consistent policy of the state?
I'm sorry, an administrative policy?
That has been the consistent policy of the state.
I'm not aware of a decision where it said that's the consistent policy of the state. I think it's that we've had reviewing courts looking at instances where they've reviewed sufficiency of notice and determined whether the property owner was provided sufficient notice in order to, you know, proceed with their appeal of their tax assessments. And so I think Spranger, as counsel cited, was a great case on that, as well as the Perfecting Church. There's another case cited in our brief, which is a Skybolt Partnership versus City of Flint. That kind of even goes beyond if someone didn't protest to the Board of Review, you still get a summer tax bill in July, triggered that, and then there is a 30-day appeal period that can be evoked to the tax tribunal after receipt of the summer tax bill. So even getting beyond, so if you had issues with notice, you didn't go through the city's internal review process, you didn't go to the March Board of Review, you still have the ability to be heard by the tax tribunal even after receipt of the summer bill. And I think that's why it's an important distinction in this case, why
when
nobody...
You say the summer bill, is that issued if you ask for it, or is that issued automatically?
So before March Board of Review, the property owner gets notice of what's a tentative assessment, the tentative taxable and assessed values. That then goes before the Board of Review. The Board of Review can, you know, change those values. And then you would get, if there is a change in values, you get a notice in the change of the assessment. But then when that assessment were to become final, you would get a final tax bill in the summer. Because
But does that mean, you muttered through all of that, but is that only if you go into the process? If you just get the bill and sit on it, are you saying that you'd automatically get a summer tax bill?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, you do get a summer tax bill.
And what does that tax bill say then about what you can do with it? Can you protest it?
Well, again, the statute says that you can proceed, the Skybolt case says
you got no notice before.
Proceed to the tax tribunal to appeal those values. So even after receipt of the tax bill, you can still proceed in the tribunal.
And you cite this Michigan comp law as 205-735-A6 for that?
Yes.
So all these taxpayers got a summer bill too? Did they all got one?
There is no allegation in the complaint that they did not. And under state law, they would have received one.
So they could have appealed at that point?
Again, they would have the opportunity to present issues with the sufficiency of the notice, and then the tribunal could make a determination.
Wait, they would have to, then they could make their argument about how the notice from the spring or winter or whatever was inadequate. So they would have to bring that issue up? Or could they just challenge the number, the assessment?
Well, again, in appealing to the tribunal, if they did not appear in protest before the Board of Review, that fact would become known to the tribunal. They would be able to have the tribunal, it would either exercise its jurisdiction or not, and in doing that determination, it would essentially be reviewing the sufficiency of the notice. And that's what this...
It would be back to where they were then. I don't get...
But that's... Understood, Your Honor. It's still an opportunity to be heard. It's a remedy under state law. I see my time's up, so thank you very much.
Seitz?
Yes. May it please the court, Ted Seitz appearing on behalf of Appellee Wayne County, Michigan. Only one claim was brought by the plaintiffs against Wayne County, Michigan in the district court, and that was for a claim for unjust enrichment. The district court never address that claim substantively because...
Are you all claiming, do you all contest that there was sufficient notice here? You're all admitting that there was not sufficient notice, right?
Well, as to Wayne County, Your Honor, they don't have a role in the assessment piece of the tax process in Michigan. They only have a role in the foreclosure process in Michigan, which is a different set of notices. And in that case, Your Honor, the notice would be adequate as to foreclosure properties.
Are you all contesting whether it was sufficient?
The tax assessment notice, Your Honor, tells it was simply late by 14 days.
Look, I don't mean to get too formal about the rules, but I don't think other people get to answer when Mr. Seitz is up speaking on behalf of Wayne County.
I apologize, Judge Gibbons. I looked at him.
May it please the court.
Judge Nalbandian has taken blame. He said he
looked
at you.
I thought he was talking to me, Your Honor.
Well, I was.
I think he was.
Well, may it please the court. I would cede my remaining time to City of Detroit to address that question if that was what the court would like to do.
What do you want to do?
I would be curious with the answer.
I've forgotten the question. Can you tell us again what the question is?
Let me sit down, please.
I'm wondering whether they're contesting whether the notice was sufficient or not. You're not contesting that, are you?
The notice was mailed late. That's correct. But every taxpayer got the notice.
Okay, but to me that I think affects this question of this park view and whether this jurisdictional bar would apply or not. Because if you say that the notice is sufficient, then they would have to meet the jurisdictional bar, right? There wouldn't be, the remedy wouldn't exist because your argument would be it was sufficient notice.
That's correct. But plaintiff's contention is that they were absolutely barred from going to the review before the Board of Review. And if you accept that argument, which I don't believe is the case, but if you accept their argument, then they had the absolute right to go to the Michigan Tax Tribunal because Michigan law says if
they could establish as a threshold matter that it was insufficient, you're
correct.
Saying that they would, okay.
Absolutely.
Right. Thank you.
That
I
is
apologize.
My position.
Hello, Your Honors. There's just a few points I'd like to make in rebuttal.
I want to ask one question.
Certainly.
You've alleged in your complaint that all of the plaintiffs are Detroit homeowners who received these deficient notices and, quote, were illegally precluded from appealing. Does that mean they actually sought to appeal and by some either tax tribunal, by some entity or court, made a determination that they could not appeal, or is that your legal conclusion?
Our claim is that plaintiffs were prevented from appealing by the actions.
They did, in fact, all seek to appeal, and their appeals were rejected.
That did not happen in this case.
Okay.
Because
So it's a legal conclusion, not a factual allegation.
Correct. Okay. Yes, Your Honor. And there's a few points I'd like to make in rebuttal. One is about just the adequacy of the notice. No defendant, either today or in briefing, has seriously contested that either the initial written notices that were sent were deficient on their face, given when they were sent, and plaintiffs' allegations more than plausibly allege that the inadequate steps that Detroit took in contravention of its own statutes was not an adequate way to apprise plaintiffs of their rights. And I can represent before the court here that none of the plaintiffs, if it's not perfectly clear in the complaint, none of the plaintiffs received notice of those ad hoc remedies. There was then this assertion made by the Detroit defendants that the plaintiffs here absolutely under state law could have gone to the Michigan Tax Tribunal. That is incorrect for a couple of reasons. First, the tax tribunal lacks the equitable power to waive defects in its jurisdiction. And that's according to at least the Pacific Properties case and cases on which it relies.
What about the cases that have recognized an exception or whatever it is if you don't get the notice or if it's late or insufficient?
There's been no case beyond Parkview and its progeny, which for its own reasons is not good law. There's no case that defendants have cited, including Springer or Skybolt, where the state court allowed the MTT to take an appeal where there was a jurisdictional defect in the MTT's being able to hear that appeal. So the Springer case, for instance, that my colleague from Detroit mentioned, in that case, there had been an appeal to the Board of Review. The only issue in Springer was whether that petitioner could put into the record certain evidence. But there was no jurisdictional problem with the MTT hearing the appeal. So Springer, yes, said that people are entitled to due process and remanded back to the MTT, but that jurisdictional defect problem that we have here was not present. The same is true of the Skybolt case that my other colleague mentioned. In that case, there had also been a Board of Review appeal. There was also this discussion of the summer tax bill and potentially another opportunity to appeal, but that's foreclosed by Detroit statute. Detroit statute 205.735A6 states that a contested tax bill can be protested within 60 days, but that protest is limited solely to, quote, correcting arithmetic errors or mistakes, and is not a basis of appeal as to disputes of valuation of the property. The only opportunity to contest an assessment is during this first review period, and plaintiffs here were prevented from accessing that because of the due process violations here. In my last few seconds.
That citation that you gave, you said the numbers is exactly the numbers that they cite as Michigan comp laws. Is that just because Detroit numbers it the same, or were you citing Michigan comp laws?
I was citing Michigan comp laws, yes.
And you say that their statement that if that bill represents the first notice, then an appeal may be taken. What's your response to that? If I, as the client, say, well, first notice means the first adequate notice.
If that was the case, I think the statute is quite clear that you cannot challenge a valuation of an assessment after a tax bill. And also, if, as stated earlier, if a claimant here were to take a due process violation to that first level to the Michigan Tax Tribunal, the Tax Tribunal lacks equitable jurisdiction to correct errors in its jurisdiction.
Thank you.
And with that, I see my time has expired. If there are no further questions. Okay. Thank you.
We appreciate the argument all of you have given, and we'll consider the case carefully.